Everybody, welcome. If I could ask you to please turn off your phones, and if I could thank the sponsors for 2025 that the Shirim has sponsored for an aliyah for the neshamas of Brana Bas Brendit and Zelig Ben Kalman, Zichron and Livrocha. We're very grateful for that sponsorship. Okay. Baruch Hashem, you see in the streets the children walking around in their fancy dress. I hope you've all been enjoying that a little bit. And we are heading into Purim. I would like to talk today, it's quite a complicated topic. We're going to get into a lot of unusual and interesting svarim. I'd like to talk today about tomorrow's very special calendar day, which is Ta'anit Esther. Now, as we know, there are five standard ta'aniyot in the Jewish year. There's one of them is in the Torah, which is of course Yom Kippur, and four of them are from Zechariah, the fasts of Tzom Gedaliah, of Asara B'Tevis, of Sheva Asar B'Tammuz, and of Tisha B'Av. But then we have two more standard fast days, which come from a much more complicated source. One of them is Ta'anit Esther, which we're going to talk about today. The other one is Ta'anit Bechorot, the fast of the firstborn, which we're not going to talk about today. But they have more murky origins. And then there are other fasts that people take on. Bahab, which we are going to talk about today, where that maybe comes from. Fasting on Monday, Thursday, Monday, certain times of the year. We'll see where that comes. But our main focus today is going to be on Ta'anit Esther, and I think we're going to uncover some new ground. So one of the things I strongly recommend is an article by Mitchell First. Mitchell First is a very interesting gentleman. I think he lives in Teaneck, somewhere like that. And he writes often on topics that he reviews and researches in an incredibly thorough way. He wrote an article called The Origin of Ta'anit Esther, which is an academic article, but is also summarized on Sforim blog, the Sforim blog, which is a blog about interesting Jewish issues. So you can Google that, and some of the information on today's sheet is from his own research. But let's start with something very straightforward about the other fasts. Number one, in Zechariah. And there is a complicated debate as to where Zechariah and Esther fit together. They're round about the same time. According to the standard chronology in Jewish sources, then Zechariah comes after Esther. According to the academics, Zechariah comes just before Esther. But in either direction, it's important to learn about together. And Rabbi Menachem Litag has some very good material online about how to learn Esther with Sefer Zechariah. And he reckons that you can't really learn the two independently because they cross-reference. But let's look in Zechariah now. Ko amar Hashem tzavakot, soma revi'i, soma chamishi, v'tzoma shivi'i, v'tzoma asiri. These are the four fasts we just mentioned. We talked about this at length. As long as we fulfill the condition, we fix our problems between each other, we have an achdus in the Jewish people, which I want to come back to at the end. If we can fix that, then these four fasts will one day become days of feasting. Now, we will see that Ta'anit Esther, which does not appear here, may ironically be the one fast, apart from Yom Kippur, that survives into the times of Mashiach. When Mashiach comes, we may still very excitedly be fasting on Ta'anit Esther. Why would that be? But we'll see that as we come up. So let's have a look at the book of Esther itself. Now, it goes without saying that the fast of the 13th of Adar is not mentioned anywhere in the Megillah. Indeed, it is not mentioned anywhere in the Gemara. The first time we see any reference clearly for a fast on the 13th of Adar, which is tomorrow morning, is in the works of the Gaonim. We're going to get there in a few minutes, but we have a little ground to cover first. So let's first of all see what it does say in the Megillah about the 13th of Adar, and it says a lot. It just doesn't say the fasting. The Karu'u Sofrei HaMelech, and the scribes of the kings, read out b'chodesh harishon b'shloish asai yom bo, that on the first month of the year, that's Nisan, on the 13th of Nisan, v'kasei k'chol asher tziva Haman, and everything that Haman was said was written down for that day. What was going to happen on that day, 13th of Nisan? V'nishloach svarim b'yad haratzim. So runners came out with all of these, were sent out to all of the towns. V'etkol medinot ha-melech l'hashmid, l'harog, u'la'abed et kol ha-yudim. That God forbid all the Jews should be killed, slaughtered, minar adzakein, taf v'nashim, b'yom echad. On one day, the day of extermination of the Jews is going to be v'shloisha asal ha-chodesh shneimasah. It's going to be on the 13th of Adar. So on the 13th of Nisan, the year before, or the beginning of that year, if you like, you start from Nisan, they sent out that 11 months later, on the 13th of Adar, all the Jews would be killed, ushlalam lavois, and all their money would be stolen. Haratzim yatsu dechufim, so the runners went out quickly to take out this message, b'dvar melech, to take out the king's message. The hadat nitna b'shushan abira. Everyone in Shushan, of course, right there, right now, knew about it immediately on that very day. V'hamelech v'haman yashvu lishtot. This is the famous ending of the chapter 3 of the Megillah. The king and Haman sat down to drink, one of their drinking episodes, to celebrate the annihilation of the Jews. V'ha'ir Shushan nevocha. And the Shushan was in shock. How could this be that there was a date set? And this date is the 13th of Adar. At this point is the date set for the annihilation of the Jews. So what happened? So a few things happened. There was an immediate and natural automatic response, which was fasting. Now this is not necessarily Ta'anit Esther as we know it. Although if the 13th of Nisan was the day that it was given out, then this was happening in Nisan. Ubechal medina umedina. Number 3. Makom asher dvar ha-melech v'dato magia. Anywhere that they reached this terrible news, evel gadol liyodim v'tzom ubechi. There was instantaneous fasting, crying, sadness, mourning. Umisved sak v'efer yutzal rabim. And people put on sackcloth and ashes on the 13th, or round about the 13th of Nisan, which is when the original decree was made. Okay, fine. So we have one fast mentioned, or an instantaneous, spontaneous fasting mentioned. Number 4. Says Esther, when Mordechai is convinced that she has to intervene, Lech knoset kol ha-yudim. So again, now gathering all the Jews, and inside with Shushan, because Shushan is where it's all happening, presumably the other provinces have not yet received the news because it was on the way to them. V'tzumu alai. You have to now fast. This is not a spontaneous fast. This is an organized fast. Fast for me. V'al tochlu v'al tishdu shloishet yamim laila v'yom. Esther says to them, 3 consecutive days, nights, days, nights, days, nights, days. Gam ani v'narotai atzum. Okay, we will also do this in the palace. U'bechein avo ala melech ha-sheluk adat v'kashe avadati avadati. So that's the second mention of fasting, but that's an organized fast by Nisan. When did that, by Esther, when did that happen, this fast in Nisan? Let's have a look in number 5. Says Esther Rabbah, the Midrash. V'toma Esther la'ashiv al Mordechai. So Esther says to answer to Mordechai. Amraloi, what did she say to him? Lech knoset kol yudin v'nin hanimsan v'shushan v'tzumo alai. V'al tochlo v'al tishlosh yamim. What are those 3 days? Elohem yud gimel, yud dalad, v'tet vav b'nissan. The 13th of Nisan, the 14th of Nisan, Erev Pesach, and the 15th of Nisan, which is the day of Yom Tov. That was the, according to the Medrash Rabbah, the Esther Rabbah, they were the 3 days. The 13th, 14th, and 15th of Nisan. But that, of course, includes Yom Tov. And it, of course, overrides the mitzvah of eating matzah on Seder night, because she said, Laila v'yom, you can't just fast by day, you have to fast at night. And that is why the Gemara, quite famously, number 6, says, V'yavor Mordechai. Mordechai goes over, meaning the pshat level, he goes over to institute what Esther told him, but V'yavor, as in Aveira, he instituted this transgression, as it were, but in a permitted way, Amarav. That they spent the first day of Pesach, including, of course, all the mitzvahs of eating on that night of Pesach. Of course, they weren't eating Korban Pesach because A, they were in Shushan, B, there was no Beis HaMikdash, but they were eating matzah, they were eating, well, Maror would have been Drabanon, but I'm not getting in, maybe it wasn't even there yet, I'm not getting into that right now. But they were eating matzah for sure, but they weren't eating it because they were fasting. Okay? Esther, back into the Megillah, number 7. V'yavo Mordechai v'yask v'chol ashet tzivsa alav Esther. Rashi says, V'yavo Mordechai aldat lehit anot. The ruling of Esther that they had to fast, beyond sufficient shel Pesach. Shehatani, because the fast was, says Rashi, interestingly, differently to the Medrash Rabbah. He says it was Yudalad B'Nisan, Tet Vav, and Tet Zayin. Interesting. Why Rashi differs from the Midrash Rabbah? The Midrash Rabbah said 13th, 14th, 15th. Rashi says it was 14th, 15th, 16th. I didn't look into that in great depth. According to Rashi, they were still fasting on Pesach, but they were also fasting on second day Yom Tov. Okay? Which I'm sure people wouldn't mind if they'd been eating on first day Yom Tov, but since they were fasting on first day Yom Tov as well, they were, and who says there was even second day Yom Tov then? I'm not getting into all that now, but it was 14th, 15th, and 16th. Shehari Yom Yud Gimel Nichtavu Asfarim, because he says you can't count the 13th, because the 13th was the shock horror day on which they got the unbelievable bad news, and there had to be the response. And Esther, if you think about it, if the news went out on the 13th, how can the 13th be included in Esther's decree, okay, this is terrible, fast for me? Because she would have had to respond, and it has to be Laila Yom, so she said, starting tonight, 14th, 15th, 16th. That makes perfect sense. I suppose the Midrash Rabbah might take into account the instantaneous, spontaneous fasting that they all had when they heard on the 13th, but then it's not 3 days anymore. You can think about that later. How can someone fast for 3 days? I don't suggest you try this. Laila Yom, Laila Yom, Laila Yom. There'll be nothing left at the end. So the Gemara, actually Midrash Tehillim says, Yachal Yutzamim Laila Yom. You really think that they fasted 3 consecutive days? Shlosha Yomim Shlosha Leilas V'loi Havim Mesim. There would have been no Jews left to kill. They would have all been dead. Elahayu Mafsikim Ibo'id Yom. No. It meant that they, at the end of each day, they broke the fast. They had a little bit before sunset, just to, you know, they fasted most of the day, and then they started again by night. So they ate every afternoon. Although, I must tell you that when the Gemara elsewhere talks in a completely different topic in Yevamot about a husband who's gone missing, and he says that he's been in a pit with no food and water for 3 consecutive days, can we assume that he has died? Because who can live for 3 consecutive days without any food and drink? The Gemara that actually brings this 3-day fast of Esther and assumes that they did fast for 3 consecutive days and somehow managed, very unlikely but very difficult, but therefore he says, so you can't assume that 3 days is automatically impossible, but I'm leaving that aside for now. Okay, fine. Okay, that's all very well. What about the future? Where did the Tzomat come in the future? So again, like I said to you, there's no reference to Tanit Esther on the 13th of Adar, but there is number 9. At the end, when everything has turned out well, Baruch Hashem, and Esther sends to have Purim in the future, she says the following. Mordechai and Esther send now, the Kayem et Yemei HaPurim HaEle, that they have to fulfill, they have to keep these days of Purim, Bizmanehem, on their days, because of course 14th and 15th, depending on where you are, etc. Ka'ashikim alei Mordechai HaYudi, the Esther HaMalka, just like Mordechai and Esther had instituted way back then, ukasher, and just like kiyumu al nafsham va'al zaram, just like they accepted upon themselves and upon their children, divrei hatzamot v'za'akatan, the days of fasts and crying out. Now, what does that mean? That's at the end of Purim. That's like they instituted for the future the days of Purim, just like they'd accepted on themselves and their children days of fasting and crying. Now, what does Zaram mean? Does Zaram mean their children, just like they fasted back then at the beginning, them and their children, and everybody fasted, so they're decreeing in the future everybody has to feast and celebrate, because that's what happened. Or is Zaram saying, no, there are 2 things being decreed here. There's a future festival, and there's a future fast day being decreed for them and their descendants. Zaram here doesn't mean the children who fasted then in Shushan. It means their descendants forevermore will have a fast. But we'll see soon that there are Meforshim that understand that Tanit Esther is in Megillat Esther. Is in Megillat Esther, which is very interesting because ironically, that might make it even more important or in authority than the other fasts, which may be Drabbanon on some level, but this is right from Tanis Esther. We'll talk about that soon. And what's Divrei Tzomot? If there are future fasts, do we have to fast 3 days like Esther did? Or do we have to fast 1 day? We'll get to that soon. So the Ibn Ezra has some very interesting ideas here. The Ibn Ezra on Esther, look at number 10, says as follows. V'tam, what does it mean? V'kinu al nafsham v'al zaram divrei, nafsham v'al zaram divrei al tzomot. Adata Rabim, so most people think this means, now does that mean he thinks this means, or he thinks most people think this means, Yontanis Esther, by the time of the Ibn Ezra in Italy, in Spain, in France, where he lived in the 12th century, people were all keeping Tanis Esther. We know that, that it was established by then. He says, okay, that's Tanis Esther. The Machishim Amru, but there are those who say no, it's not time, there was no such thing as Tanis Esther. It's Al Shloshi Amim Shetanu Shehitanu B'Nissan Akasat Madaber. No, this is meant to be a fast of 3 days in Nissan. Okay? The Chol Yisrael Ru'uli Tanod Ketamid, and maybe everybody should fast 3 days in Nissan from now on onwards, like Esther's saying, just like we fasted in Nissan, you'll also fast in Nissan. So you're going to say to me, but how can we fast on Pesach? Okay, so find a different day in Nissan. Maybe you don't have to do it dafka on Pesach, but there are 3 days you have to find to fast. Maybe it means that. The Kol Yisrael Ru'uli Tanod Ketamid. Well, if he da'ati, and I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. What do I think, says the Ibn Ezra? Shechachamim kavu atanit yom pachad. They fixed fasts for the days of terror. Which are the days of terror? V'atam divrei hatsamot. And why is it plural? Alan is carrying b'sefer Zechariah. Esther is referring to Zechariah. Shehein b'tamuz v'av v'tishrei v'tevet. And he says, therefore, even though you didn't realize it, this book, this reference in Esther is referencing the four fasts of Sub Gedalia, Sheva Asabat Tammuz, etc., which are referred to in Zechariah. Very nice. Vatam ki kimu ayudim al nasham lismoch b'yemei Purim ki ashi kimu al nasham va'al zaram li'itanus b'yemei Evlam. And because they accepted fasts in the future, okay, just like they accepted the feast in the future, okay, b'yemei Evlam ka'ashe hukvam ha'ir v'hanisraf ha'bayit, these fasts for the future would be the four fasts. Now, these that we fast today, these deniers, the machishim, who says you have to fast 3 days, it's nothing to do with the other fasts. Who does he call the machishim? Those who are the deniers of Judaism. He's referring to the Karaites. And we'll see soon the Karaites, and maybe this even went on after the Karaites, I mean there are still Karaites, insisted that you have to fast 3 days. You can't, they didn't accept Tanis Esther, it has to be 3 days, and we'll get to them soon. Okay, fine. So far, so good. What do we have so far? 13th of Adar features very strongly in Megillas Esther as the day that was earmarked for annihilation. It didn't turn out that way, and therefore now maybe there's some kind of fast in the future. Maybe it's Tanis Esther, maybe it's the four fasts that we have which have nothing to do with Megillas Esther. Maybe, according to the Karaites, it's three fasts. We'll see soon. Now, little known to most people is that actually in the Second Temple period, the 13th of Adar was a separate feast day. Nothing to do with Purim. The 13th had its own Yom Tov, which is what? Says number 11, the Gemara in Tanis refers to a book rather confusingly called Megillat Tanit. Megillat Tanit is a Second Temple book listing all the special holidays, largely connected with the Hashmonaim, who won different battles against the Greeks, where we celebrate these great victories of the Jews and we don't fast. That's why it's called Megillat Tanit. It's like a kind of Lashon Sagi Nahor. It's the scroll of fasts, which are the days that we don't fast. Yeah, like Kiddusha Rabbah on Shabbos morning, the great Kiddush is the one which is the small one. Okay, I'm not getting into why there's such a thing as Lashon Sagi Nahor. Okay, so one of those fasts, I mean, the famous ones are Purim and Hanukkah. They're the ones that survived. And another one that didn't survive, because most of them didn't survive, was Betleisar on the 13th of Adar, Yom Nikanorhu, is the day of Nikanor. So who's Nikanor? My Nikanor. Not to be confused with the Nicanor gates in the temple, which were donated by a Jew called Nicanor. This is a non-Jew. He must have been a popular name at the time. Okay, Nicanor was a non-Jew. Who was he? The Tanya. Nicanor echad me afarchei yivanim haya. He was one of the Greek generals at the time of the Greek the Antiochus. Every day he would stand up and wave his hands, Al Yehuda, Yerushalayim, towards Yehuda and Yerushalayim, not just Yerushalayim, but Yehuda, where the Hashmonaim were living. Va'omer, and he would say, Eimatai tipol biyadai va'aram sena. When am I going to capture Jerusalem and Yehuda and lay it waste? I'm looking over the border, waiting for the day that I'm going to invade and I'm going to kill all the Jews. Okay? Ushigavra Malchus Beis Chashmonai v'Nitzchum, and when later the Chashmonaim beat Antiochus and his people, katsatsu behinus yada v'raglav. They cut off his toes and fingers and thumbs, yeah? V'ta'alum b'shari Yerushalayim. And they hung them from the gates of Yerushalayim. Okay? I don't know whether it was like shtick. No, it wasn't shtick. It was very serious. But they hung them up. I wonder whether it's related to Adoni Bezek, who in Yeshua, where they, in Shoftim, rather, where they cut his fingers and toes off. Was it, no, it was Yeshua. Okay, but I don't know about that. The Amorim, they said, Pah, Shahaya, Madabe, Begaiva, okay, here, where he would speak so arrogantly, the Yadayim Shehainu Menifas on Yerushalayim, and these hands that waved across to Yerushalayim, Taaseh Bahem Nekama. This is where he ends up. Fingers and toes up on the walls. And it's this kind of the hanging of the Bnei Haman who wanted to kill the Jews are the people who end up, you know, not killing the Jews, etc. Now, it's interesting because if you look at this, if you look at other records of this, this is not the only place that this man is mentioned. He comes up in Josephus about this battle. It's called the Battle of Hadassah. Hadassah is the from the Hebrew word Hadashah. It's near Bet Horon, which were a lot of the battles over there. And it comes up also in the Sifrei HaMakabim, Sefer Makabim Aleph and Sefer Makabim Bet, this battle. And it's interesting that there was a Persian punishment at the time that they cut off the head and the fingers of the general, okay, it's interesting, which would actually fit better, because this would be the mouth that spoke and the hands that waved, but by the time of the Gemara it turns into the fingers and toes, I'm not getting into all of that now, but what's interesting about the Battle of Hadashah is that it's seen as one of the most famous victories of Yehuda HaMakabi, especially since the Greeks at this battle broke the treaty that they'd agreed with the early Romans not to use weapons of mass destruction on the battlefield. What were weapons of mass destruction in the ancient world? War elephants. War elephants. Now, the Romans did not have elephants, because in case you didn't realize, if you've ever been to Italy and you go around talk the sightseeing, you ain't going to see any elephants. If you want elephants, you've got to go... Oh, yeah, that's why. And they're all hiding in the fridge, right? You know, but you won't see any elephants, because if you want elephants, where do you got to go? You've got to go to India, which, of course, the Greeks had access to India, the Romans didn't, or you've got to go to Africa. And, of course, the famous story of Hannibal, which, of course, who was Phoenician, Hannibal, okay, who went with his elephants across and over the Alps, etc., etc. So the Romans were scared stiff of war elephants because this is a weapon of mass destruction. You can't beat these things. And they made the Greeks sign that they would never use them in 181 BCE. This 180-something BCE. This battle was in 161 BCE, and the Greeks broke the treaty. And Yehuda HaMakabi had to contend not just with the Greeks, but with these war elephants. And that's the famous victory, and they killed the elephants. And later there's the story of Elazar, where the elephant fell on top of him. And that's why the Yeshuv Elazar is in Elazar in Gush Etzion, because that's one of the ways that he just killed the elephant with a sword, and it fell on him. It's named after him. So this was actually a very, very famous battle indeed. Although Yehuda HaMakabi himself was killed a year later. Now, why are we interested in this? Because Megillat Tanit is a list of days on which you're not allowed to fast, and you're not allowed to give eulogies. And one of those days is the 13th of Adar. So how could the 13th of Adar have been a fast, Tanit Esther, or whatever, when it was Dafka the opposite? It was a day on which you were not allowed to fast. Vanafachu, okay, we'll see how that happens. Also, you have another, perhaps less pressing problem, but a problem, is Megillat Tanit also says you're not allowed to fast on the day before any of the days mentioned in Megillat Tanit. So even if you want to say, Nicanor, Shmikanor, you know, I'm not worrying about Nicanor, but Purim itself, the 14th, was in Megillat Tanit, should have had its own din, if you like, that you couldn't fast the day before. So either way, we have a bit of a problem with Tanit Esther, and we're going to have to see how we get through that. Okay, let's go. Page number 3. There is a good source, by the way, for something that the Karaites said. When the Karaites said that there should be a 3-day Yontzef, actually their source is not just in their own literature, but there's a rabbinic source. I don't know if they knew there was a rabbinic source. If they had known, I'm sure they would have denied it. But let's look at number 12. Minag Rabotenu. There is a Minag. Masechet Sofrim. Masechet Sofrim is a later Masechet. It's in the 9th, 10th century. There's a scholarly debate exactly where it was composed, maybe in Eretz Israel, maybe around in Byzantium or in Italy. It's a slightly later Masechet than the Gemara's, but it says as follows, Minag Rabbo Seinu Sheba Ma'arav, that the rabbis in Israel, the rabbis in Israel had a minag, meaning not the Babylonians, the rabbis in Israel. They would fast a 3-day fast of Mordechai and Esther, but not one day after the other. Prudot. They would pick 3 days. Fast, then another fast, then another fast, but not together. Ula acha Purim. And they do it after Purim. Okay? There's a zeche. Now, when was the original 3-day fast? In Nisan. Not before Purim. So, okay, they did it after Purim. Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. Bahab. They fast Bahab. Not Bahab that we fast, or some people fast after Pesach, but this was Bahab after Purim. The Lama A Mitarim say Bechodesh Nisan. So why not do it in Nisan when you were meant to do it in Nisan? Okay, don't do it on Yom Tov, but do it in Nisan. So you can't. Why is Nisan so special? Because that's the month on which in which the Mishkan was established. And the first 12 days of Nisan were dedicated to the erection of the Mishkan, and each Nasi brought a korban. Every single day of Nisan is a Yom Tov. It might not feel that way when you're cleaning for Pesach. But just remember, as you're scrubbing whatever you're scrubbing, today is a Yom Tov, because this is a day that the Mishkan was established and there was a different Nasi that brought a korban. V'chein la'asid, lavoi, and so too in the future. Okay? Atid ha-migdash lehibanot b'nisan. The temple is going to be built in Nisan, l'kayem ha-shenema, as it says, to establish, ein kol chadash tachash Hashem. Very interesting. Nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun. We will have our Mishkan. We will have our temple, please God, in Nisan. Now, what does this mean? It means that they couldn't fast in Nisan, so they pushed it to the end of Adar. So they fasted 3 different days at the end of Adar. And I brought you in the footnotes another reference that talks about this fast at the end of Adar. And maybe this was only in Israel. This was not in Bavel. There's a whole discussion about that. There is a book called the Sefer Minhag Tov. It's certainly not known much to me. It's an Italian book from the 13th century. It says there were some people that fasted before Purim in Adar, 3 days, either consecutively if they could, or broken up. There was a custom amongst some Murano women who were from Spain, from the expulsion from Spain, or in Spain, when living as Christians, that they fasted for 3 days a month before Pesach. And there were even Karaites that said you have to fast 70 different days. Now you know why the Karaites died out, okay? Because they said from between the 13th of Nisan and the 23rd of Sivan, you should do a lot of fasting. The truth is that I don't think people ate such a lot those days, you know, anyway. I'm not sure that there was a massive difference between the day that you did eat and the day that you didn't eat back in the day. Today, we've become a little bit more, mufunakim on this issue. Okay, b'seder gamor. So we have this evidence of a 3-day fast. We'll come back to it soon. But where does Tanis Esther come from? Okay, so we saw already that the 13th was the day on which the Jews were meant to be annihilated, but what in fact happened on the 13th of Adar, number 13, this is very important. Because in the end, the king gave the Jews permission, look at this word, lehikahel, to all be together, to gather together. They actually, v'nafochu, they were able to defend themselves on the 13th, Taf, Anashim, Ashal, and Lavoz, they were able to take the money, although in the end they didn't take any money, okay, which is interesting. But Yom Echa, B'chol Medinat, HaMelech, HaKashveris, there was one day set aside in the whole Persian Empire, which was what? B'Shloshasel HaChodesh, Shnei Masa, Hu Chodesh. The 13th of Adar, for us, is Yom Kehillah. It's Community Day. It's the day that we came together, the day that we pulled ourselves together, the day that we managed to fight back against all the powers of anti-Semitism, anti-Judaism, anti-Torah that we had to defend on that day, and that is what happened. Look at number 14. U'b'shneimasa chodesh u'chodesh Adar, in the 12th month, says the Megillah, the month of Adar, b'shloshase yombo, on the 13th day of the month, asher higia dvar melech, at all the places where the king's word had come, Sibru. It's a very interesting word, Sibru. That they'd announced, they planned in advance that the enemies, Lishlot Bahem, to kill the Jews, Venafochu. And it was all turned upside down. Asher Yishutu Ayudim, and in the end, the Jews were the ones that were able to fight back. Heva Basson, they came against their enemies. Nikhalu, again, this word Kahal, Nikhalu Ayudim, Ba'areihem, everyone got together. Bechomedina al-Melech, Achashverosh, Yishloch Yad, Bemivakshay, Ratam, to get back, to prevent their massacre. The Ishlo Amad Lifneihem, and nobody would stop them, Kinafal Pachdam al-Kol Ami. Okay? Yom Shlosh Esatrei Adar is the Yom Kihilah. And this, I will see, is very important. This is the real foundation, hashgafically, of Tanis Esther. It's Yom Kihilah. It's the day of Kihilah. By the way, another day of Kihilah, way back in the history of the Jewish people, was Har Sinai. Okay? That's also called a Yom Kihilah. And that actually is part of the connection between the acceptance of the Torah at Purim, the acceptance of the Torah at Sinai. There's a link there which we're not going to get into now. And in fact, in three places, it talks about the fact that the Jews gathered together. I brought you number 15. V'shara Yudim Asher B'Vin Yisamelech, the Jews outside Shushan. Nikalu, they also gathered together. V'amad al Nafsham, to defend themselves. V'noach mi'ovehem v'harogos v'nehem chamisha v'shivim aleph. And there were 75,000 that they killed to defend themselves. But they didn't take any of the booty. That's one of the Purim Torahs. How do you know that the Jews never used credit cards back in the day? Because it says uba visa lo shalchu et yadam. Fine. The yom shlosha asa lo chodesh adar, the 13th of Adar. Again, the 13th. For noch bar asar boy, and they rested on the 14th for asa oisa yom mishteres. Fine. The Gemara, in fact, when it talks about the 13th, remember the Gemara, and we're going to come back to that Gemara in a minute. The Gemara at the beginning, the Mishnah at the beginning of Megillah, says that when do you read the Megillah? Well, most people read on the 14th, and the Jews in Wall City read on the 15th. And the Kfarim, the villages, they have special permission, lahakdim, to bring it forward, liyom haknisa. Remember that word, liyom haknisa. So the Gemara goes through, which days will that be? And it says, well, we can't be talking about the 13th. We can only talk about the 11th and the 12th, because the 13th, you know before this Gemara, the 13th is famous, says the Gemara. You don't need the rabbis to give special dispensation to extend Purim to the 13th. Why not? Number 16. Kedama Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak Shloish Asar Zman Kihila Lekolhi. Because the 13th is already famous. You don't need a rabbinic decree because it's Zman Kihila. So you see the rabbis in the Gemara recognize the day of the 13th of Adar as Zman Kihila Lekol. It's a day where everyone has to get together. Okay, fine. How did we end up fasting on this day? So I'm going to do this quite quickly. There are five or six places in the Gaonim, not in the Gemara, in the Gaonim that start explicitly mentioning the idea of Tanis Esther. The first one is the She'iltas. The She'iltas of Rabbi Chaigon, an early Gaonic work, it says the following. Aval Tanit ben Krachim ben Kfarim ben Yaros. It's irrespective of when they read the Megillah, when it comes to the fast, Kulam mit'anim b'shlosh asar ha'adar. Everybody fasts on the 13th of Adar. There you have it. That's Tanis Esther explicitly. By the time of the Gaon, in the 8th, 9th century, they were already talking about Tanis Esther the way we know it today. And that's what they understand to be Zman Kihila. At the end of that line, it says, my Kihila. What does it mean to get together? Why would the Jews get together? Yom Tanis. We get together for an asifa. We get together for a fast. We get together to do tshuva. We do achdos, etc. So it says that's why it's called the Yom Kihilah. That obviously is a fast day, and therefore that is an early source for that. Similarly, in the Midrash Tanchuma, there is a little tshuva embedded into the Midrash Tanchuma. I'm not going to read the whole thing in number 18, but it rereads the Mishnah. Remember the Mishnah at the beginning of Megillah that I just mentioned, when it says that the Kfarim, the villages, could bring it back to the Yom HaKnisa. Now the normal way we understand the Yom HaKnisa is it's market day. Market day, why? What was the problem in the villages? They didn't have anyone who could read the Megillah, or they didn't have a minion, but you don't really need a minion for Megillah, but they didn't have anyone who could read. So on Mondays and Thursdays, either the villagers went to the towns to buy produce, so they were in a big place and they could read. Or the townspeople went to the villages, different meforshim, to sell to the villages on market day. Either way, they got a minyan. So Yom HaKnisa, according to most meforshim, says, that's when they read the Megillah. says this tshuva, no. Look at the sort of about six lines up from the bottom where it says Yoshev Batanis. Okay, it says at the end, my Yom HaKnisa. What does it mean in the Mishnah, the Yom HaKnisa? Yom HaKahal. It's the day of Kahal. Now, you and I know what that day means, the day of Kahal. That's the day we all get together to fast. To fast. Da'amamah shlosh asah yom kehillah lakolhi v'gazru tanit b'shlosh asah ba'adar. And they instituted a fast on the 13th. What's the deal with the Kfarim? According to this, not that they read Megillah early. They had special permission to fast early. Okay, but the fast is on the 13th. She'im chal, so he says now, she'im chal yudal eliyos be'echad b'shabbos. This is a beautiful source by Rabbi. Because if the 14th Purim day falls on a Sunday, so the 13th is Shabbos, okay? So you can't fast on Shabbos. And by the way, the 14th can easily fall on a Sunday. It happens all the time, okay? Also, litanus b'shabbos, you can't fast on Shabbos. So when do you fast? Ube erev Shabbos, so why not fast on Friday? You fast on a Friday. It's actually a good idea, the many being down, that you should fast on a Friday because, you know, be hungry for Shabbos. But a communal fast, it's one thing having a public fast, saying, look, I'm going to skip lunch because I want to be hungry for Shabbos. But it says, well, the Erev Shabbos, nami osim mipnei toreach Shabbos. You can't have a public fast on a Friday because people have to make Shabbos. Okay? And we'll see what that means in a minute. Ela makdimin umitani b'chamishi, but you bring it forward to Thursday, shehu achadasar ba'adar, which is the 11th of Adar. And that's what the Mishnah is talking about. She'iketanis slichas v'rachamim hu, because the main point of a communal fast is slichas, is rachamim, v'asili nuimi covered Shabbos, and that will stop you from covered Shabbos. What does covered Shabbos mean? Getting ready properly for Shabbos. Getting dressed, getting showered, making the food, cleaning the house. How can you do that if you're in this public, you know, Yom Kihila? He says there, u'kovet Shabbos adif mi elef tanios. And kovet Shabbos is more important than 1,000 fast days. This is just to be a Musa. I take this for myself because I'm the one that always is like leaving things to the last minute on Shabbos. And I'm running around 10 minutes before Shabbos. So I'm with my checklist, like what did I do this, did I do that? He says, no, that's not the right way to be. Getting ready properly for Shabbos is worth 1,000 fasts. Rav Soloveitchik had a great line in America. He said, many Jews in America keep Shabbos. Very few of them keep Erev Shabbos. You know, Friday is a proper... The covered Shabbos Doraita. That's interesting. Covered Shabbos, we normally learn from Yeshayahu. No, it's Doraita on a certain level. The Tanis Derabbanan. The Asi covered Shabbos Doraita. V'dachi Tanis Derabbanan. This source is actually a beautiful source for covered Shabbos, apart from the Tanis. But it does tell us that the Tanis was on the 13th, and maybe some people had special permission to bring it earlier. It also, we're going to have to deal with the question, when we ever have a fast, whenever we have a fast day, and it falls on Shabbos, we never bring it earlier. We always push it off. Why do we push it off? Why do we bring Koronas forward? We never bring fasting and mourning forward. Sarabat Teves can fall on a Friday, but it can never fall on a Shabbos, which is interesting. And we would maybe even Ezra talks about that. But because we push off a tragedy, maybe Mashiach will come, whatever that means in the short term, whatever. Tanis Esther we bring forward. Why? That tells you something already about the day. That it's actually not the same kind of day. We'll see. It's a Yom Kiilah. It's not a day of mourning. It's a day of tshuva. And it's quite different. Now, days of mourning are also days of tshuva. But this is a very different kind of day. So let's have a look in the Rishonim. Let's go on. We're steaming ahead into the Rishonim. I've skipped over some Gaonim. I mentioned in the top of page 5, there's a tshuva of Natronaigon, Rav Natronaigon, that talks about this as well. He talks about Ta'anit Purim. He calls it Ta'anit Purim. According to one Gersa, he calls them Ta'aniyot Purim. Which then, once he says Ta'aniyot Purim, everyone's, oh, the 3 day, remember the 3, okay, the Karaites. So apparently it's really meant to be Ta'anit Purim. There's also a tshuva of Rav Shurira and Rav Haigon, a father-son team, where they talk about Sheva Brochas that falls on the 13th of Adar, and who and whether you can drink the Koshel Brocha. So the fact that they're talking about whether you can drink the kosher bracha on the 13th of Adar, clearly they had a fast day that day, and we see that. I mean, you could have sheva brachas easily. I went to a wedding 2 nights ago. So I suppose they're going to be having Sheva Brachos on the 13th of Adar, which is one of the things that now you know where to look. Okay, into the Rishonim. So the Abu Dharam says, like we were just saying before, that this is not the same as other fasts. Number 19. Od mit'ani b'yud gimel ba'adar. He's listing the fast. We also fast on the 13th of Adar, Hasamach l'Nisan, the Adar that comes just before Nisan, if it's a leap year. The ein u'mufurish b'kasuf, this is not in the Pesukim. The loy b'talmud, this is not in the Gemara. Ela chachamim achronim tiknu. Later chachamim brought it on. Who? The Gaonim. It comes from the Gaonim. Acha chasimus ha-talmud, and it happened after the Talmud was sealed. So it's a Gaonic fast, which already makes it quite different to the other fasts, which are from Zechariah, which are from the Gemara. This is a Gaonic fast. The Rambam also makes that distinction. Number 20. He says, Arba Yimei Hatzomus Ha'elu, the four fasts that we get from Zechariah, Harihei Mefurashim B'Kabbalah. They are explicit in the Tanakh. The Kabbalah, he means the received Tanakh. And he quotes from Zechariah. And then he says in Halacha Hei, number 20, V'nahagu Kol Yisrael V'zmanim Eile. And the Minag, these days, is Lehitanus B'Shlosha Asaba Adar. The Minag is the fast on the 13th. Is a remembrance of the fast in Haman's time. So the Rambam in Spain and then North Africa says, yeah, we have a minute to fast on the 13th. He doesn't say it was instituted by the Gaonim specifically. He sounds like it's a minhag of the people. Maybe there's a difference there. He was less bothered, by the way, by what was instituted by the Gaonim. Because as far as he was concerned, if you're not in the Gemara, you don't have any greater status than anyone living today. He felt himself on the same level as the Gaonim. Before him, he's explicit. But he said, look, it's a minhag. You can't break a minhag. A minhag is a minhag. The Rosh in Ashkenaz says, yes, people keep this minhag. And they keep it for a very interesting reason. Number 21. Perush Rabbeinu Tam. Here we have Ashkenazim. It's an interesting agreement between the Sfarim and the Ashkenazim. Zman Kehila Lakol. What is this Zman Kehila? Shekol mit Asim. L'Tanit Esther. Everyone gathers together for Tanit Esther. Ubaim B'nei Akfarim. And the people from the villages come. L'Yaris to the towns. Why do they come to the towns? Loima Slichos. They come to say Slichos. Tachanunim. The Fisheboi Nikhalu La'amod on Hashem. V'hayu Tzrichim Rachamim. And he brings a separate reason. He says, no. It's not because of Esther. It's because the 13th of Adar is the day that we came together to defend ourselves as Jews. And therefore, that's the day that we needed Rachamim. And we got it. Therefore, this is the greatest day of the year for the Jews to get together to say Slichos. Because of all times, of all history, this is the most successful day, if you like, that we were given v'nafachu, because I'm sure at the beginning of the battle, they didn't know how it was going to go. Maybe they thought that thousands of Jews would die, and they would lose. It wasn't clear. Yeah?
I guess what makes this even less clear to me is, if this was something that saved us,
yes.
Why do we celebrate it by...
So, good. Coming up in a Rav Soloveitchik in 2 minutes. 2 minutes. We'll get there. That's a great question. That's a perfect question. We're going to get there in a couple of minutes. Okay? V'chein, just for now, in bold, in the middle of number 21. V'chein matzinu b'moshe. And this didn't start with Purim. We see with Moshe she'asa tanis k'shenilcham ba'amalek. There's a tradition that Moshe also fasted when they fought against Amalek. And we see later in Tanakh that Shaul instituted a fast when they fought against the Plishtim, etc., etc. Mikan nira, the Rabbeinu Tam sad l'tanis Esther. This is a support for what we now call tanis Esther. Shana oisin k'moshe asu b'yimei Mordechai v'Esther k'shin halu'e yudim la'amod al Hashem, etc., etc. Okay, so there you see the Ashkenazim and the Sfaradim are all fasting on Tanis Esther, but it's not a regular fast. Number 22, the Ritva, Spain, 13th century, late 13th century. Umikan yesh smach lemash enago ha'olam litanis b'yom yud gimel shelo matzin lo zecher achar talmud b'shum zecher acher b'talmud b'shum makom. We don't see any hint to this 13th of Nisan in the Gemara, but everyone agrees this is a fast day, he says. You can't count this with, as the same as one. Don't make the mistake of thinking this is like Asara Batavis. It's like a private fast. But of course you have to fast. It's not because of Tanakh, it's because of the idea of you have to not abandon minhag. Minhag is very important. I mean, that's also in Tanakh, but the idea is from minhag. Tzarech kavanah mibe'odyam, but he thinks you have to accept Tanis Esther the day before because it's more like a private fast. We don't pass him that way. You don't have to accept Tanit Esther this afternoon like you would a completely private fast. And since he doesn't really have a rabbinic basis in the Gemara, when it falls on a Sunday, we're going to bring it back to Friday, even though it's the 11th. And it's not the real day. It's okay because it's like a private fast. The We don't have a problem of bringing forward Puranut because it's nothing to do with Puranut. It's nothing to do with terrible things that happened. On the contrary, it's to do with wonderful things that happened. So you ask the question, well, if it's to do with wonderful things that happened, let's have a glass of wine. So the answer is that's the next day. Okay, and we'll see why. We also have a glass of wine, but we have to fast first. We'll see Rav Soloveitchik on that in a minute. Rashi has an interesting tshuva in his siddur. I'm not going to say it inside, I'll mention it outside. A woman asked him, a shaila, a very pious woman. She said she's got a big journey to do on Tanis Esther, and she's got to ride on a horse all the way through the day, and it's very difficult, and she doesn't want to fast. And can she get a heter to not fast on Tanis Esther, but she'll fast the next day on Friday to kind of make up for it, yeah? I don't think today people would put that as part of their shaila, you know, I'll pass the next day. And he says to her, no, I'm sorry. Riding a horse is a pain, but it's not like, you're not sick and you'll manage. And he doesn't say, oh, you're a woman, you're weak, you're riding a horse. He says, no, you have to fast. Everyone fasts, you have to fast. It's like a different kind of fast, but it's a minhag. You can't mess with a minhag. A minhag is a minhag. It's nothing to be taken lightly. And he says, no, you have to fast, even though it's what he calls a minhaga ba'alma. So we see pretty universal acceptance that this is done at the same time on the 13th of Adar in Sfardi and Ashkenazi lands. Few new things. Okay, the Ravid. The Ravid wants to say that it comes from the Megillah itself. He says an interesting thing. Look at number 25. Quoted here by the Ram, the Ravid's living in southern France. What I like about this is that we're covering almost every single community. The Sfaradim, the Ashkenazim, the Provençal, we haven't had any Yemenites, sorry. But okay, we get the Ravid now. The Ravid in southern France. Because of the Yud Gimel, ain't the Domina Shartavis. Yud Gimel is not like the other fasts. The Zikaron hu l'nes. It's not a Zikaron of the Churban, it's a Zikaron of the Nes. And he thinks it's indicated in the Psukim where it says, it's mentioned there in chapter 9 of the Megillah. Lamar saying, just like they celebrated Yom Tov, Purim is a package deal. It's a day of drinking and it's a day of fasting. It's part of the deal. And he says, and then he addresses the issue. And if you want to ask me, in Kem Shiyud Gimel Tani Kavua Hu, Heichmanu Yom Nikanor Bechlal Yamim Tovim, he says, if it was in the Megillah that this was such a special fast day, and they were fasting during the Second Temple period, if it really comes from the Megillah, how could they have this feast, Yom Nikanor? And he gives a difficult answer. No, it's that you could only, the only problem is that you would not be allowed to give a hesped. I thought, but Tan is Madai Einasa, but really there was never a problem of fasting on these special days, it was only a problem of being sad. But actually this was not a sad day, this was a happy day, it was just a happy fast day. That's a little bit difficult. What's he saying? He's saying that all these days in Megillat Tanit, really the problem with them, these feast days, is that you weren't allowed to give a hesped, because you weren't allowed to be sad. But you were allowed to fast. But why is it called Megillat Tanit? The name Megillat Tanit sounds like it's something to do with fasting, and the Ran doesn't like that answer. He rejects it and he says, this doesn't make any sense. I don't think this is the case. You can't really give that answer. You could give an answer, which we're going to see in a minute. It's a happy fast, and the only problem of the special Megillat Tanit was a sad fast. The problem is fasting because you're sad, as opposed to fasting because you're happy. We'll see that coming up in a minute. Let's just skip the Ozarua for a second and go to the Shulchan Aruch. Bottom line, page 27, okay? And then we'll get into Hashgafa, which I think is fascinating. Page 7, source 27. Says, what's the bottom line? Shulchan Aruch. Mitani b'yud gimel, ba'adar. You have to fast tomorrow, 13th of Adar. V'im chal Purim be'echad b'Shabbos, and if Purim falls on Sunday, not like this year, but if it falls on Sunday, magdim li'tanis b'yom chamishi, you bring it back to the Thursday before. Says the Ramah, v'tanis e'ein chova, but this is not like an obligatory fast. It's a minhag-based fast. It's not a purely halachic fast. And therefore we are actually, bottom line, even though it's hashkafically very important, we are more lenient on the fast of Esther than other fasts. Okay? Kagayim, mu'ubarot, pregnant women, or minikot, or nursing women, or l'chale she'en bosakana, or a regular chale. Now, our minhag today is that pregnant women and nursing women don't fast on any of the fasts, other than maybe Tisha B'Av, and certainly on Kippur, obviously. But he says, even if you are someone who rules that the pregnant women should fast on Asara B'Tavis or whatever, not on Tanis Esther. V'afilu rak kovei einayim, even someone who has a real migraine. A kovei einayim is a migraine. Someone who has a migraine, I mean, not just like they have a slight headache, they have a migraine. She'em mitzta'arim harba, and it really is upsetting them. Lo yitani, they don't have to fast. It says v'yifru achakach, but they have to make up the fast on Friday. Yeah, don't think you're getting out of it. If you eat on Tanis Esther because you think you have to fast another day, because the point is that Purim has to have a fast. He said Purim has to have a fast. You still want the answer? I'm going to tell you in a minute. Aval shagrin, but regular healthy people, just maybe a slight michush, a headache, a tummy ache. No, you should be in a tibur. You shouldn't break from the tibur. It's a fast day. Ve'imchal Purim biyom aleph shemitzan in boi hey mitbarfanav. And if the fast is even brought forward to the Thursday, v'chal bo bris mila, and you have a bris mila. I don't know if any of you are going to a bris tomorrow. If you're going to a bris tomorrow, then there's a whole debate: who can eat? Can the people eat? Can the ballet bris eat? Can the father and the mother eat? I'm not getting into that now. That's an interesting halacha. So, bottom line, halachically, Tanis Esther is a binding fast, but it's a fast based on minhag. You shouldn't separate from the community, even more so on this day. This is the last day of the year that you want to separate from the community, because the 13th of Adar is community day. That is Yom Kehillah, which is, I think, why they're so focused on this. Because the whole point of this day is Tzibur. It's about Klal Yisrael coming together. Okay, now, let's look at the Hashkafah. In the last seven minutes or so of the shiur, let's look at the Hashkafah. And I'm not going to read all of these inside, but I want to mention a few of them. So, the Orchas Chaim, which is connected with the Kolboy, the Orchas Chaim says there that normally you wouldn't be allowed to fast on the day before a feast day. The Megillat Tanit feast days, he's not bothered by Yom Nikanor, he's bothered by the fact that Purim is one of the two that survived Megillat Tanit. Megillat Tanit was abolished, all these special feast days was abolished when the Churban happened. Like, well, what are we celebrating? We need Nikanor, we are out of our minds. It's a Churban. But the two that survived were Megillah and were Purim and Chanukah. So he says, I'll tell you why it's not a problem to fast the day before Purim. That's Purim, it's Megillat Tanit, so you're not allowed to fast the day before. He says, because Tanis Esther, he says, is a happy fast. It's not a sad fast. It's a day that you fast, but you have your music on, and you can dance around the house, and you can get dressed up in costume, and you can go and, you know, that it's nothing to do with Churban. He said, and therefore, there was never a suggestion that that should be a problem before Purim. On the contrary, it's part of Purim, and now I'll answer your question as to why it is. Look with me at the Eshkol, the Sefer Eshkol. Very, very interesting Sefer, 12th century Provence, says the Sefer Eshkol as follows. Garcinam b'Rosh Hashanah, b'Perek Kama, b'Hilchasa b'Teila, b'Megillas Tanis, b'Hilchasa loy b'Teila. We have this slightly contradictory, apparently contradictory phrase in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah. We got rid of Megillas Tanis, we didn't get rid of Megillas Tanis. Which is it? The loy kasha, not a problem. Have a Chanukah Purim, because Chanukah Purim, we did not get rid of these feast days. Have a Shari Yomi, and the Gemara says, but the others, we did. The Ikar de Kashi, and I have a problem, he says, the Kashi, given the Chanukah and Purim loy batel, since Chanukah and Purim are still there, lifnei mul acharei nami loy batel, so we should also have a prohibition of fasting the day before, like I said. Hi-hachi amai tekinu rabon on tanis b'yud gimel b'hadar. Why did the rabbis make, he thinks, seems to think it's like a rabbinic decree we saw before, Tanis Esther. The loy adina ma takile, so we don't even know who decreed Tanis Esther, Hatanis Barbara, we don't even have no clarity on that, but everyone does it. Really, it should be also the day before a feast to fast. And look what he says. They had this day of great suffering, tragedy. We have to fight our enemies. We may die today. Today's the day we may die as Jews. Existential threat. Nikalu Yudim v'milchama asa. They had to go to war. We had to send our people in to fight. V'tzar hayalehem. They had this day of terrible stress, anxiety. V'nachu b'yudalad. And then relief on the 14th when they celebrated. And he says, you can't have Purim without experiencing both. You can't have that celebration without first feeling the anxiety. You can only really be happy on the 14th if you felt the suffering and anxiety on the 13th. Not because it's sad. It's not sad. But it's the only way you can really feel the simcha is to experience the anxiety that goes before the simcha. I think we can relate to this a little bit. You know, I'm not sure that what's happening at the moment is finished yet. I think it's not finished yet. But the idea of anxiety and facing threat and then going from that into simcha, where our enemies are beaten and destroyed, and how could that happen? And we were so worried, but now we're so relieved. But then now we think of it more and we're now worried again. This combination. He says that's part of what Purim is. Purim is not a day of just feasting. Purim is a day of experiencing both those emotions. You might ask or add, why do we eat Maror at the Seder? Why do we eat Maror? It's a night of Geula. So some of the Meforshim answer, because on Seder night we can recognize how the Maror, the bitterness, was part of the process. Now we look back and we see that anxiety, which at the time we were so distressed by, was part of the process by which we could appreciate the Geula. So we thank God now for the Maror, because at the time it was terrible. But now looking back on it, it's part of the Geula. And this is an extremely important message for us today. Yes, sir?
Yom Zikaron and Yom
HaAtzmaut. Yeah, perfect. Yom Zikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. On the one hand, you'd ask, how could you possibly put those 2 days together? How can families who've lost so much then just morph immediately, pivot into celebration? And one answer is that, no, one day explains the other. We only really appreciate Yom HaAtzmaut when we realize what we had to give for Yom HaAtzmaut. Perfect example. Ever thought of it? Perfect example. So I think that's, Rav Soloveitchik talks about that the Purim has those two angles and you can't have one without the other. You need the Tzar and you need the Simcha. It's not because it's sad. It's because you need that pain in order to feel the relief. Okay, let's go on to a couple of other reasons and we'll finish off. A little bit more of a pedestrian reason. I'm afraid the Sefer Eshkol over the page number 8 gives a rather sort of let down after that beautiful idea of the Tzar and the Simcha. He says, oh, maybe they also instituted it so you wouldn't eat and forget to read the Megillah. Okay, so don't do that. The Lavush says that, you know, Judaism is a package deal. You know, Rosenkiss mit Mandeln, you know, you have to have both. If you want to have the raisins, you also have to have the bitter, the almonds. You can't have it both ways. Judaism is a package deal. There's some beautiful Kabbalistic ideas. Alpi Kabbalah, I brought down in number 32. You can read this for yourself. It talks about the idea that we need to fast before Purim so we won't go too crazy on Purim. We come into Purim as Balei Tshuva, which will just keep the lid on how excessive Purim can get. Or, if that doesn't work, and we end up going too crazy on Purim, at least we can defend ourselves and say, yeah, okay, I went a bit crazy, but look, the day before I was very frum. I was very frum on Tanis Esther. So, look at it as a holistically. And he brings that down, he brings some other reasons as well. He talks about the idea that Gezeiras Haman was not completely annulled. And in every generation, there's a new Haman and there's a new Gezeira. And he talks about Tach V'Tat. And therefore, let's not kid ourselves, say these sources, that we can't just pretend that it's all hunky-dory. The Amalekim are still out there. And the last thing I want to just bring you is this beautiful idea, which we've hinted to and even explicitly said, of how Tanis Esther is a Yom Knisa, it's a Yom Kehila, because don't forget, Haman says to Achashverosh in 33, okay, he says to the Melech, Yeshno Am Echad, Mufuzar Mufurad. The Jewish people are split. They're fighting each other. They're too busy killing each other or fighting each other to actually be unified, and that is their weakness. And then Esther says the answer to that is Lech Knoiset Kol HaYehudim. So gather together. That's the antidote. Gather them together. The Midrash in Tehillim says that the point of a fast day, what is the point of a fast? Mikan she'ikru shel tzom ba'asifa. The main point of a fast day is not the not eating. It's the togetherness. It's Jewish Unity Day. I think we should make this, you know, Jewish Unity Day. Because that is in all the sources. And number 36, the last source I brought you, we'll finish with this, the idea that you can't have the community without the people that you don't like. The idea that the chelbana, the foul-smelling spice, was included in the Ketores, because you don't like the people that live down the road, well, that's your problem. They are part of the Jewish people. The idea that Sibur means Sadiqim, Beinoinim, Urshayim, it's a day to put those ideas aside. And of course, then you can concretize that on Purim itself by not only just accepting the other people, but giving them a gift. Mishloach Manas. Mishloach Manas shouldn't just be to your friend. Ah, happy Purim. Oh, happy Purim to you. It should be to someone who it really makes a difference to in an important way. So please God, we should all have a meaningful Purim. I'm sorry I wasn't able to ask for it. I'll ask for it afterwards. But let's leave it there for now. Purim Sameach. We should all have the Surah Tovah.